You're listening to Brooklyn College Radio, broadcasting at 1090 AM in the Brooklyn College area and streaming live at www.brooklyncollegeradio.org. We're cooler than your vintage Atari 2600.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Geek Speak. Happy birthday to you. Hey!
Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. And of course, we are podcasting at speakgeekspeak.com. Happy birthday to Geek Speak. It is episode 22 of the show. And since I'm 22, I guess that would make that the birthday episode now, wouldn't it? Got a whole bunch of great news today on Geek Speak, and I'll give you a nice rundown right now. Your TV might be changing in the next couple of years. Find out what bill George W. Bush just signed into law. Also, speaking of television, one of your favorite programming blocks is going online 24/7. Find out which one it is in a couple of minutes here on Geek Speak. And I have a review of the brand new Windows Defender Beta 2 for Windows XP. I'm not quite sure if it's nearly as good as the first beta was. And of course, gotta go vintage on you here. I have found the best damn hack of an NES game. I say that often, but the best damn Mario hack, at least, of an NES game out there. It's called Mario Adventure, and it's an old school gaming experience like I've never experienced before. And of course, my comic rant of the day. Previews have been getting a bit revealing lately for Marvel Comics, and I'll have my take on that for you. But I'm going to start things off here with the HDTV news that just got signed into law by that president we have here in the United States. I think his name is Bush, but I forget offhand. And here is the news coming out of HDTVmagazine.com. And you're going to be looking at some changes, folks, because the law has just been signed saying that by February 17th, 2009, all U.S. broadcasters must end their transmissions of analog television signals. Big news, to say the least, because a lot of people still broadcast in analog out there. So it's going to be pretty difficult to make that transition over, but here is the complete story. President George Bush signed legislation into law today that set February 17, 2009 as the date when U.S. broadcasters must end their transmission of analog television. Some in the press have called it the end of television as we know it, and I feel fine. Others see it as a dawning of a new era. The legislation also allocates up to $1.5 billion to reimburse customers who purchase digital-to-analog converter boxes so their analog TV sets continue to work after the shutoff. Interesting there. The legislation excluded a provision that would have allowed cable operators to degrade a broadcaster's HDTV signals to standard definition. Oh boy. And in doing, denying consumers the means to see the highest quality digital programming. With today's action, said Consumer Electronics Associated President Gary Shapiro, President Bush set a high, hard finish line for the nation's transition to digital TV. The CEA, along with several other lobbying groups, including the National Association of Broadcasting, the NAB, otherwise known as NAB, supported a hard cutoff date. I say it's about time for this because it has been a long time now where the battle between digital and analog has been fought in the realm of television. Now, a lot of places out there still use the analog signal. I mean, DirecTV, for example, they're a completely digital system. That much is a given. But a lot of the stuff that they broadcast is still in standard definition quality. Now, obviously, there is a huge difference between HDTV and standard definition, but again, they're broadcasting in digital, so right away you're going to get some improvement on your signal. Then, of course, there's stuff like the regular cable companies that don't offer the digital cable. like a regular Cablevision package. A lot of that stuff is not going to be digital. And most of those stations are going to have subpar signal. You know, I mean, you're going to have a decent quality image, but it's just not going to be the same as it would be with digital quality. A lot of the local stations as well do not broadcast in digital to this day. For instance, the smaller channels, like for instance, here in the New York area, channels 9 and 11 still are not digital. They do not have an HD signal, and they still go over with the regular stuff. Channel 13, a lot of the public broadcasting stations are not digital yet, and a bunch of cable stations still are not digital. So this is basically going to force the hand of a bunch of stations out there. Now, what is this going to do? Well, that is the big question. And right away, you got to ask yourself, are stations going to survive this change? I mean, a lot of the smaller stations out there don't have the money to spend to make this transition. Now, obviously, the government will be assisting the transition over from analog to digital, but it's changes like this that usually take out the stragglers, you know, the smaller television networks. And I mean, there are some networks that have plenty of listeners, but when compared to others, you're not going to get too much. Like, for example, do we really need two golf channels? I'm sorry. Now that they have every single station that DirecTV offers, basically, except for the sports packages, I have all of the stations I never wanted to see. You know, I have the snowboarding network, I believe. I've got two golf channels. I've got all the Fox Sports Nets. And while it's interesting to watch, it's amazing how often these Fox Sports Nets are showing the exact same programming, only like an hour apart or something like that, which is always amusing to me. But still, a lot of stuff out there shows stuff that not many other people would want. It's very localized. G4 is trying to get themselves out of that stigma. I mean, for years now, they've just been the gaming network. That's all they've been. And now they're trying to make it so that they're branching themselves out. Again, a lot of people are protesting this change because, well, in the first place, Tech TV was a very localized station. And then it was converted over from Tech TV to G4 Tech TV and eventually became nothing in the process. Now, with a station that does not have a lot of listeners, or watchers, that is. See, I'm speaking in radio terms here. That's why I immediately said listeners by accident. You got to ask yourself, will these places survive? Will the localized networks have to branch themselves out to get more listeners, to get more advertising money to make this change? I mean, are we going to see cable networks go bone dry here? I mean, are we going to see stations have to change their entire broadcasting? It's a difficult question to answer. I mean, while I do support this change, while I do think it's something that has to be done, like, for instance, who still has a rotary phone these days? You know, everybody's updated to the either the touchstone or the cell phone, you know? Everybody has a touchstone phone or a cell phone these days. Nobody is using a rotary. And this is what the change is here. It's like changing from rotary over to touchstone. That is the difference between analog and digital to me. You got a more reliable system. You've got better quality, and you are going to be able to put out a better product. But again, some of these stations might be caught in the dust. And one network that I'm going to mention in particular here, nice segue here, without even having to change the music, Adult Swim on Cartoon Network, which is officially its own network, just like Nick at Night is a separate network from Nickelodeon. After a specific time of the night, it switches over from Nick to Nick at Night, and they have separate ratings and everything. Now, one of these networks that has decided to go into the realm of the uncharted territory that a lot of the networks have avoided is Adult Swim. And while they might not be switching themselves over to digital, they're switching themselves over to another type of medium. And that, of course, is online. And the online revolution is pretty much as big as a digital revolution right now. A lot of people out there are enjoying their online content. A lot of people will watch online content more than they will even watch television these days. I mean, the vidcasts are huge, and they have been for a long, long time now. So what are these new stations going to do to broadcast themselves on the new medium? Well, obviously, they're going to have to change things. And Adult Swim is officially going to be broadcasting themselves 24/7, entire episodes on the internet. And here is the news courtesy of AdultSwim.com. As of March, Adult Swim is going to be switching over to a 24/7 online network. They're still going to show themselves on TV, obviously, because that would make no sense to completely get out of that. But anytime you log on to AdultSwim.com, you'll be able to find The Fix. It's what they're calling it, because their Friday Night Fix was so popular, they are going to expand it to every day of the week. And you're going to be able to find complete episodes of Adult Swim programming anytime you go onto their website, available for streaming. Which is a good thing, in my opinion. Adult Swim's branching themselves out. Adult Swim is taking a risk. And risks are so hard to find in programming, period. But now we have a huge one. And I think it will pay off for Adult Swim. I think that Adult Swim's demographic are the type of people that are online most of the time. I mean, they're trying to get that, you know, 20 to 40 demographic somewhere along those lines. Maybe get some of the younger people in there as well. And I myself, as a 22-year-old, know that I spend most of my time online. And there have even been times when I have not watched Adult Swim because I was on my computer. Now, with the ability to watch Adult Swim whenever the hell I want, yeah, I'm probably going to take that opportunity and I'm going to run with it because it makes sense. You know, it's a logical step up from where things were before. You are going to basically live your life however you want it and watch whatever you want. It's like having a TiVo on your internet now. Or at least you're not using your internet as a TiVo, like some other people I know, like me anyway. Had to say that, sorry. And come on, there have even been people in the business who have admitted to downloading a show here and there. So it's not, I'm not the only one, folks. But anyway, now I won't have to download any of these shows. I'll just be able to watch them whenever I want. And that, my friends, is power. And Adult Swim is looking to grab its demographic more than anybody else. Just like these stations are going to have to grab their demographics by switching over to DTV, giving them a better quality picture, better quality sound, better quality everything. Do not let yourselves fall behind. Make this changeover before the deadline. Okay? Make it so that everybody you know will be able to watch whatever the hell they want in beautiful, beautiful picture. And also, the idea of switching HD signal over to standard again, yeah, thank God they shot that down. Because that would just be stupid. Way too many downgraders out there. I can't wait for high-quality television on a regular basis. Maybe the shows will get better, too. I doubt it. All right, so I've been known to bash Microsoft on a regular basis on this show. It's kind of hard not to, the way Microsoft has been the past couple of years. They're just so beat upable. They're like that dweeby kid on the block that, you know, you just want to push over. I'm sorry, I used to be that kid. I really shouldn't be talking like that. Anyway, their brand new beta for what is now known as the Windows Defender has come out. And it has come out for Windows XP. It is going to be integrated into the brand new Vista. So it's nice that they're not just leaving XP behind. It's nice that we're at least going to have some sort of an XP version of this. And I downloaded it because it made sense since I had the Microsoft anti-spyware, which is the precursor to the Windows Defender, which of course was beta 1. And I upgraded it. And since I've upgraded it, I don't know if it's working, which is odd. See, with the previous version of Windows Defender, back when it was still Windows anti-spyware, there'd be a little, I guess you could say it sort of looked like a target icon that popped up in your system tray to let you know that it was operational. Well, with Windows Defender, and I backed this up with a bunch of other sources, so I'm not the only one that noticed this. When you first install it, you get an icon. And then, after it updates itself, the icon goes away. It decides to take a vacation to Tahiti or something, and it's just not in your system tray. And right away, I thought, okay, it's not working. And yet, I opened up Windows Defender and saw that everything was checked. I saw that the real-time protection was on, which was mostly the reason why that icon was there in the first place, to let you know that the real-time Defender was working. For those of you who don't know what a real-time Defender is, what the real-time Defender does is it makes sure that no spyware is getting onto your system. If you go to a website with spyware, it will stop it from installing itself. It'll ask, would you like this particular program to install? Sort of like what your virus program does. Most virus programs do that, and now most anti-spyware programs do that. SpyBot also has an included T-timer, which does pretty much the same thing. But I like having both of them do the job because they don't stop each other from working. It's not like having an antivirus program. You can't just have one of them. You got to have multiple ones running at the same time. And this is the same situation here. You definitely need to have multiple versions of a spyware thing going at the same time. So I've got Windows Defender. I've got SpyBot. I've even got Adware. Not Adware, but Adware. Very similar things to say. And like I said, Windows Defender is just basically in the background now. I don't know whether it's doing anything. I haven't really had a pop-up since I switched from the anti-spyware over to Windows Defender. So I don't know whether its behavior has changed or whether it's just doing a really, really good job of stopping things. I also like the old icon a lot better. The new icon looks oddly like a castle. And I guess maybe that's why, like, you're defending the castle. But at the same time, it looks a bit like a puzzle piece. And that would make sense, too, because the puzzle pieces to Windows XP were lost along the way. And that's why there's so many security holes. That was wrong of me. I apologize profusely to you, Bill Gates, and all of your friends. I will never say something like that again. Okay, I lied again. But nevertheless, the Windows Defender is supposed to be doing a good job. It has a couple of added features to it as well. And here is the story, courtesy of WindowsConnected.com. And I got a lot of my stories from Dig.com today. And by the way, since I have not mentioned it, thank you, of course, always to, you guessed it, David Price, for giving me that for a story later on that I'll be talking about. And that is my Nintendo DS story that I'll be mentioning later. But most of the Dig.com stuff that I got, I'll be talking about on today's show. Anyway, as I sidetracked myself there, Microsoft has just released Windows Defender Beta 2 for Windows XP. This product was originally available as Windows anti-spyware, as I mentioned. Specific features of Windows Defender 2 include, and this is important here, a redesigned and simplified user interface. Incorporating feedback from our customers, the Windows Defender UI has been redesigned to make common tasks easier to accomplish with a warning system that adapts to the severity of a threat so that it is less intrusive overall, but still ensures the user does not miss the most urgent alerts. Interesting there. So it's sort of like that program that the U.S. has had for a while now, like we're in a situation green, we're in a situation black, we're in a situation yellow with red polka dots. Well, hopefully this will be much easier to understand than any of that stuff was. Also, improved detection and removal, which is usually a good thing. Hopefully it will indeed be a good thing here. Based on a new engine, again, they keep talking about this new engine, so I guess they just scrapped the old one and went to a new one, or maybe they did it on top of it like they do with a lot of their operating systems. Based on a new engine, Windows Defender is able to detect and remove more threats posed by spyware and other potentially unwanted software. Real-time protection has also been enhanced to better monitor key points in the operating system for changes. Protection for all users. Windows Defender can be run by all users on a computer with or without administrative privileges, which is a nice touch. This ensures that all users on a computer are protected by Windows Defender. And the most important thing here is that Windows Defender supports 64-bit platforms, accessibility, and localization. So 64-bit Windows XP will be able to use Windows Defender. And also, something they do not mention here, but it is prominent on their website, Windows 2000 with Service Pack 4 can use Windows Defender. The previous Windows anti-spyware did not allow you to do that. So that is a nice improvement there. It's nice to see them going back and adding support to their previous OSs, because a lot of people still have Windows 2000. I myself am currently looking at Firefox on a Windows 2000 computer here at the radio station, so that says something right there. The 64-bit is a nice touch, and the Windows Defender protection is a nice touch, but again, I was happy with Windows anti-spyware. It was doing a really, really good job. Now, to change basically everything, to work it from the ground up, you usually do that when something's wrong. And unless there was something they were not telling us about the previous Windows anti-spyware, I see no reason for this. Really, I don't. Now, Giant, I believe, is what this anti-spyware program used to be called. So I am thinking that it's possible they were just trying to get the rest of the Giant out of this and use their own stuff from the ground up, because Windows likes to do that with everything that they buy. They like to then come out with a version that is pretty much their own version with very little to do with the previous one. Except for their OSs. Yet again, I make the comment about the OSs, and once again, I apologize to Bill Gates. But I can't really give this a solid review yet, because even though I've had it on my system for about 5 days now, I really don't know what it's doing. I don't like it when things just do stuff in the background, because when I think in the background, I think you're not supposed to be there. You know, rootkits run in the background. They don't show up in anything. The Windows Defender at least shows up in the task manager, which is a plus, because if it didn't, I'd really get worried. But that's the only place you can really see it's doing anything. And I checked it about 8 times to see if everything was on. Even the notifiers are on, and I'm not getting anything right now. So, like I said, either I'm doing a really good job of keeping my system clean, or it's not working properly. And like I said, with a Windows-based program, it would not be a shock. But for now, since I have not gotten any major spyware on my system in the past 5 days, I'll give it a 3 out of 5. Mostly because I think it's doing its job. Think is the main word there, and I'll put that in italics and underline it and put quotations around it, and I'll even add some parentheses. I'm a special guy like that. I think it's doing its job. I hope it's doing its job. If it's not, well, then you'll have an angry Ian on your hands in about another 2 weeks, because trust me, if I end up with any spyware, oh, Windows, you will pay. Windows Defender, you will pay, my friend. But I don't think it's going to do that. I hope it doesn't. Please don't do that. Seriously. Come on. I paid my money. No, I didn't. It was free. I love my listeners. I definitely need to make that perfectly clear. I love you guys. Seriously, you guys are the best, all right? The other day, I was looking at my feed burner, and I see that I am one listener away from 100, and that definitely filled me with happiness, knowing that there's at least 100 people out there, or almost 100 people out there, listening to my podcast on a regular basis, and I gotta thank you guys, because it really is. Like, you're the reason why I keep going back to the show. It's because of you guys that I feel like I'm talking to somebody. And talking to yourself is not nearly as fun as talking when other people are listening. So, again, thank you very much for listening to the show over the past 22 episodes. And it really means a lot to me that you guys keep coming back for more. But another reason why I love my listeners so much is that they give me content to talk about on the show. And a previous contributor to the show, those of you who have listened to my Showcase Spotlights know Toby Cook quite well, and Toby sent me an interesting article out of the UK, and since then it's ended up in Joystick, So it looks like it will be coming over to the US. But there is a media player now for the Nintendo DS. And this media player acts as a 4 gigabyte hard drive. And what this 4 gigabyte hard drive does is that it allows you to play a whole bunch of content on your DS. You are able to use your Nintendo DS as a PSP, pretty much. And that was my one problem with the DS when it came out. I mean, again, the PSP is more for its media content than anything else. But now here we are, and the DS is catching up. And here's this article out of CodeJunkies.com in the UK. Max Media Player for the DS turned your DS into a mighty media machine with Max. This is going to be the greatest add-on in the history of the handheld. All right, that's a bit much there, but it certainly does look cool. Max Media Player turns your Nintendo DS into a powerful home entertainment device with movie playback, music on the move, and a convenient picture viewer. At the heart of Max Media Player for DS is Daytel's exclusive Max Media Player. Just insert the cartridge into your DS's game slot and boot up our fully featured browser. From here, you can play your MP3 audio tracks, watch videos, and view your JPEGs on your DS's screen. You can even use the browser to activate executable programs. You know what that means? Mods? Oh, yeah. You'll basically be able to bring on your beautiful, beautiful emulators, hopefully, and play some old games on your brand new DS. Yeehaw. But where do you store all this media? Simple. Max Media Player for DS comes supplied with a 4 gigabyte hard drive unit, which you plug into your DS's GBA cartridge slot. It draws its power directly from the DS, no additional batteries are needed, and 4 gigabytes is a lot of storage space, and it definitely is, because all you gotta do is think of that 1 gigabyte flash card that a lot of people use for the PSP. And there are even iPods that don't have 4 gigabytes on them. The Shuffle is a 1 gigabyte thing or a 2 gigabyte thing. So 4 gigabytes is going to be more than you need, basically. And you'll be able to play pretty much everything on it. They have a picture of Lost playing on here. And, you know, I thought when I first heard about this that it would look a bit odd. And yet, it looks beautiful. Seriously, if this is not a mock-up, if this is the real thing, again, I might be leaning towards getting a handheld system for the first time, possibly. And more stuff coming out for the DS. And this one's courtesy of David Price. As I mentioned before, David Price gives me information from the Washington Post that says the DS machine to work as portable TV. The Nintendo DS handheld video game machine will work as a portable TV with a card equipped with a tuner and antenna that allows people to watch digital broadcasts. An internet browser feature is also in the works for the machine, which has 2 screens, including 1 touch panel. The machine already comes with a Wi-Fi wireless connection. Nintendo said it has no overseas plans for the digital broadcast card, but is considering offering the browser feature abroad. Sales of Nintendo DS in Japan have grown to 6 million units since it was introduced here in December 2004. That's faster growth than Nintendo's Game Boy Advance or Japanese rival Sony's Corp's PlayStation 2, which took about 20 months to sell that many, says President Satoru Iwata. The new feature will help boost sales of the machine, and Nintendo is targeting sales of 10 million in Japan sometime this year, he said. Worldwide, Nintendo Corporation has sold 13 million of the machine since they first went on sale in November 2004 in the United States. The Kyoto-based company, famous worldwide as the maker of Super Mario and Pokemon games, says the browser function will be available in June in Japan, but did not give details of the dates or pricing for the digital broadcast. And digital television broadcast is set to start in Japan in April. So, it's starting in Japan, and with the DS Lite, it's even smaller now. And the screen size didn't go down at all, which is great. Is it going to come over here to the US? That's another question. But as more and more things come out for the Nintendo DS, it's becoming more and more of a fuller experience. You know, before this, it was just basically like, it was that gimmick system that had a couple of good games for it, and other than that, it had a touch screen that, you know, didn't really have too much of a use. And as time goes on, they're getting better games, they're getting better add-ons, and it's looking like a better and better machine every single day. And I say good for Nintendo. Definitely, without a doubt. Nintendo has been a great, great company for years now. And all this is doing is adding to that. So I give my props to the DS. Now, is this going to give competition to the PSP? Definitely. Because right away you got to ask, well, also, this is USB 2.0 protocol here. So you're just going to be able to connect this to your computer, put all your content onto this max 4 gigabyte hard drive, and you're good to go from there. Anybody that gives the Nintendo DS anything that the PSP has, you're making it a better system. You're making it a more rounded system. You're making it more of an entertainment system. And that seems to be the way the portables are going these days. You know, it's less about the games and more about what else it can do. I mean, sure, the games are fun and exciting, and the DS has always been more about the games than anything else, which is why I like it. Because the PSP has, like, what, like 8 games? Seriously, like, when was the last time you heard anything about a new PSP game coming out? It's like, ever since Grand Theft Auto came out, I haven't heard anything, basically. I've heard things about new, you know, online content and a couple of things along those lines, but not really too much about the games. DS has better games. At first they didn't, now they do. And now they might have a better entertainment portion as well. It's pretty pricey, though. It's going to be at least $200 here in the States. And I don't know if you're going to want to pay $200 more to get something that costs you about that much in the first place. But people who already have a DS might very well want to do that. If you're first getting a DS now, this might not be too much of a draw. But if you already have a DS, it's a decent upgrade. And to be able to watch your online content, you know, like Digital Life TV. Could you imagine watching Digital Life TV on your DS? That'd be brilliant. Or episodes of Lost off of the iTunes store on your DS. That would be a lot of fun. So if this comes out here in the U.S., like I believe it will, you're going to see a lot of great things out of this add-on. And again, thank you, Toby. Thank you to David. Because without you guys, I would not have a show. And that is the listeners, of course. And also, David and Toby do a great job on their own. And when I come back from this musical break, I'm going to give you guys news on a great retro game and also news on the next Showcase Spotlight, which I'm going to start putting together damn soon. You know you love it. So yeah, I know it's been a while since I've announced anything about a Showcase Spotlight. And I know the last one was episode 15, and I said they'd be about every 5 episodes, but took a little bit of a break on those because, well, sometimes you gotta. And I think I know what the next topic is going to be. Now, I had this in the works for a little while, and then I held off a bit to give people some time to recover from the last one and also to think about who I might want on the show. So I'm thinking that this Showcase Spotlight, which would be Showcase Spotlight number 3, is going to be focused upon, drumroll please, American animation. Now, one of my podcasting buddies, Bruce out of Comic Cast, just had a, well, still has, because he's still got one more episode to air, just did a special on cartoons on his show. And that's why it's sort of inspiring to get mine out, because I've been thinking about this for a while, and I definitely think we'd be able to get a great show out. So, not quite sure about any of the details yet. Everything will be forthcoming as to who is going to be on, and exactly when you should expect this. But it should not be coming any later than, I'd say, the next 2 or 3 weeks. So, you'll probably actually be getting 2 Geek Speaks that week, because I don't have any break in the action to air this in. I'll be here pretty much every single week for the until at least spring break. So, yeah, like I said, you'll probably end up hearing 2 Geek Speaks that week, one of which being a special Showcase Spotlight, because I really want to get this one done, because I love animation, have for the longest time. And doing one on American animation, even though I'm a Japanese anime guy, I love American animation. That's what got me into animation in the first place. And I'd love to talk about how recent American animation has been influenced by said Japanese culture, and also the die-out of 2D over 3D, and if perhaps we'll see a resurgence sometime soon. So I'll be getting in contact with some of the fellow geeks out there, possibly a couple of my friends from the Comic Geek Speak forums, and I'll let everybody know what's going on with that in the next couple of weeks. But anyway, switching over to what is usually something I talk about on the show, and will definitely be something I talk about today, retro gaming. Retro gaming is my thing and has been for the longest time. And now I have found what could quite possibly be one of my favorite hacks of all time. And I know that's saying a lot because I've had a lot of hacks on the show and I've had a lot of created games on this show. But here we have a game based right off the bat. You know it's going to be something fun. As soon as I say what it's based on, the Mario Brothers 3 engine, okay? One of the best games of all time. One of the best 2D adventure games of all time for any system, period, in my opinion. And now we have Mario Adventure. Since I mentioned adventure, why not? Which basically builds upon that engine and creates a brand new game with brand new graphics, brand new things for Mario to do, brand new levels, and brand new enemies. And it's one hell of a ride. This is courtesy of VintageComputing.com, and once again, I found it through Dig, so thank you, Kevin Rose, for making Dig in the first place. And here is the story. In a way, I think we all thirst for a new 2D side-scrolling Mario adventure. I would agree with that. It's some sort of basic human need, along with eating, sleeping, and reproduction. Okay, that's a bit much. Why, just last week, I was about to keel over for want of Mario when at the last minute I found the greatest NES game hack of all time, Mario Adventure. And I'm going to switch down to what it has, and you'll be able to save your progress, which is definitely a plus. Here's a quick overview of the most important changes between Super Mario Bros. 3 and Mario Adventure. Number 1, completely new worlds and new levels. Number 2, modified graphics, especially of the environments, backgrounds, coins, blocks, and some enemies. Number 3, at any time you can switch between your current power-up and the last one you collected. That is awesome. Which is stored in your item box at the bottom of the screen. Similar to what they had in Mario 3, where you'd be able to, on the world select screen, select one of the power-ups you got along the way. So it's a nice addition, definitely. New power-ups. The following is quoted directly from the text file version of the manual. You have Fire Fire Mario, which basically does everything Fire Mario does, only he can jump higher and the fireballs go through walls. Oh, yeah. There's Invisible Mario, which was taken from Mario 64. You can temporarily go behind any background on a level. You've got Magic Mario, who takes 3 stomps to get taken down a level by the enemies. So he's going to be Magic Mario for 3 times the amount. So in other words, you know how when you're big and right away a enemy hits you and you're small again? Well, with Magic Mario, you get 3 strikes. And I like that idea. I'll give it 2 thumbs up. So he's basically a stronger Mario. And he throws magic stars that are quite powerful, and he can stomp a lot of enemies down. Kuribo's Mario. Kuribo Mario. And I know I mispronounced that terribly, as always, but for those of you who remember that shoe that Mario had in Mario 3, well, now you can get it in pretty much any level in the game, which is awesome. And the worlds, I can definitely tell you, are completely rebuilt from the ground up, which is definitely a lot of fun. And yet, it still feels like an old-fashioned Mario game. You know, they didn't just take graphics from another game and put them on top of a Mario game and say it's brand new. No, they created a brand new experience with previous fashion. And with this brand new Super Mario Brothers coming out for the DS, which is basically going to be a combination of the old-school 2D game with the 3D, it's nice to see another 2D version, straight 2D version of Mario out there. And this is what you got. And I love me a hack. It's a bit glitchy here and there, but just very small glitches. If you have a good Nintendo emulator, like FCE Ultra, I would definitely recommend. That's the one that I use, and it has never done me wrong. And, of course, being able to play this with my PS2 controller is a lot of fun also. But as long as you've got a good one, you'll be able to play this. And the link that I'll be linking to, basically, it is the ROM. Usually, or at least with the previous version, you had to actually piece the ROM together by placing it on top of Mario 3. But here is a finished version of this ROM. Also up on this site at vintagecomputing.com, they actually have an interview with the creator of Mario Adventure. So if you want to hear more from the creator himself, you can do so. I'll link to this in the show notes, of course, and you can read the interview from there. But it's definitely a lot of fun for anybody who remembers the old days of gaming, like I do. For anybody who enjoys an old school experience, like I do. And for anybody who loves to get down Mario style, old fashioned Nintendo style, this is the hack for you. And like I said, it's not just a hack, it's a brand new gaming experience. Give it a shot. Let me know what you think. Oh, and by the way, one more small piece of news here that's pretty interesting. Once again, thanks to David Price for this, but he has given me information that the DS will have Opera as its browser, which is a very interesting move there, because a lot of the companies either create their own browsers from scratch or just use a cheap version of Internet Explorer, but they will be partnering with Opera to put out, hopefully, a very good browser. And I would not be surprised if it is indeed a good browser. So thank you very much, David, for that information there. And now I'll switch away from the gaming side to the comics side. And this is a situation that I have to talk about on the show because it's really been pissing me off lately. And I don't like to be pissed off. I really don't. But this has been doing it lately, and I definitely need to talk about it on the show. Marvel Comics is a great company. All right, I'm not going to deny that. They've been doing a great job of bringing themselves back up. Ever since the bankruptcy scare back in the 90s, they have risen to peaks beyond anybody expected from them in the past couple of years. Their movies have been doing great. Their comics have been getting better. And it's no more of that typical crap we'd find back in the 90s. Even though I was a fan of the 90s, now that I read Marvel Comics now, I realize just how bad it is in comparison. The new Marvel is much better than the old Marvel. But one thing I've been seeing lately, and it's a questionable call, is any comic fan out there has heard of previews, obviously. Previews is what we use to see what's coming up in the world of comics. And pretty much every comic company has themselves in previews in one form or another, and it allows you to make orders ahead of time. That's basically how you get your pull list, and it's a good way to get it. Also, usually online, those previews will end up on both Newsarama, Comic Book Resources, and a couple of other different sites, including Comics Continuum, after a while. And one thing I've been seeing lately in Marvel, which I have not been seeing in DC, is that Marvel has been giving away a lot of its stories before they even get to the stores. So months in advance, 2 to 3 months in advance, we're finding out what's happening in Marvel Comics stories before reading them. Now, I'm not going to give away anything that was in their most recent previews. If you want to find out yourself, you can go to Comic Book Resources or Newsarama. Because, again, these spoilers that I found out in the past couple of weeks are very big spoilers. One thing that I will mention is the recent, well, definitely recent, as it just came out this past Wednesday, it's Ed Brubaker and Michael Wark taking over the chores of Daredevil, which obviously previously was Alex Maleev, or Malev, I forget how you pronounce that, and Brian Michael Bendis. And the previews, about 3 months before the story was released, gave away what happened in the first issue by the second issue's preview. which is not cool, okay? Now, the most recent preview that came out of Marvel gives away a huge spoiler for Fantastic Four: A Death in the Family. You know who's going to die already. Without having to read any of that Civil War stuff, you know who's going to die because Marvel gave it away in their previews. I really don't know how smart this is. Also, another Ed Brubaker story, X-Men Deathly Genesis, that gave away that, you know, that third Summers brother was going to be revealed. They didn't give away who it was going to be, but they gave away that it was going to be revealed. And I talked about that on a previous podcast, on one of my 0.5 episodes I did from the house. I don't know how smart it was to even reveal that. You know, the mystery behind the character was huge, but to admit that it was going to be the third Summers brother was a bit of a risky call. And Marvel might very well end up alienating some of its longtime fans if they continue to do things like this. Honestly, Marvel Comics has never really done this in the past. DC's definitely never done it. And a few times they have, they immediately took it down. But Marvel has not. Marvel tends to think that if fans know what's going to happen, they're going to then pick up the issue and find out for themselves and be shocked about it all over again. Well, guess what? Shock can really only happen once. Once you find out the news, it's hard to pretend you haven't already found it out. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that the comics won't be good, and I'm not saying the shock factor still will not be there, but you're still taking away some of the intrigue. I mean, I'm going to have to start shying away from previews, really, because previews used to be just, you know, giving us an update on what the next storyline was going to be, sort of what was going to happen in the next couple of weeks, and that would be it. But now it's giving away way too much for my tastes and the taste of a lot of other people. A lot of people do not like spoilers. I myself have known to dabble in some spoilers here and there, but I go to previews expecting previews, not spoilers. If I want to go to find out about a spoiler, I'll go to a spoiler site. But previews is not meant to give away such information. It was not made to be that way. And now Marvel is all of a sudden changing things. I really think this might come back to bite them. I really think Marvel's going to have to change this, or else, like I said, they're going to alienate an entire group of fans. And it's bad enough that there are fans out there, including myself, to think that Civil War, Annihilation, and Planet Hulk are way too similar to Infinite Crisis. And that the timing on this is definitely not a coincidence. But now, to go about this questionably here, really, I mean, does Marvel even care about their comics anymore? Are they just really focusing on the movies now and are leaving the comic fans in the dust? Because they used to have respect for us. You know, we used to be the top priority. And I'm not saying we're still not the top priority, but I really think that the priorities have skewed a bit in the past couple of months, possibly even the past year or so. Marvel has to remember their roots. Marvel has to remember that if not for the comic fans, they would not be where they are today, because we're the guys who picked up the comics in the first place and made these characters popular. We're the ones who made it so that making a movie would make sense. By spoiling their own comics, they are wronging the comic book fan. They're taking away any reason why we should even pick it up. Just skip that issue, go to the next one. Again, I'm not saying that's what a lot of people will do, but I do know at least 5 or 6 people that have told me through forums that I'm on that they're not even going to bother picking up that particular issue because they know what's going to happen already. It's nuts, it's crazy, and it needs to be changed. And I really hope Marvel hears me on this, or at least somebody does, and at least lets them know by proxy or something, because, like I said, you don't want to lose fans, Marvel, especially not in this position, because we made you what you are. Remember that. Fans keep a company running. You sour the fans, you sour your business. This has been a comic rant brought to you by Pepsi Twist. Or podcast soda, whatever. It's wind-up time here on Geek Speak, where I switch things over from the geek side of things to the sports side of things, and today I'll be talking about the Winter Olympics. Here is what I think about the Winter Olympics. Is it over yet? Seriously, come on. I have never been less enthusiastic about an Olympics than I have been this particular Winter Olympics. There is nothing to watch, honestly. I mean, the hockey hasn't been too good. Nothing has really caught my eye. And in order to be a successful sport, in order to be a successful event, you got to do something interesting to catch the casual sports fan. And a lot of the sports that they have now, I'm not interested in. Seriously, I am not going to sit down and watch a curling match. For real. Come on. Be serious here. Curling, all right? That was prominent on CNBC about 2 days back. Also, the fact that they're showing the games at about 8 and trying to make it seem like nobody's heard any of the news during the day is really stupid. Okay? When Doty Miller lost his skiing event, they really tried to make it seem like nobody had heard that they already lost. All of the upcoming attractions said, see Doty Miller, will he be able to win his event? Well, he didn't win his event, and I knew about that about 5 hours before it aired on TV, because that's what ESPN told me. It makes sense. But they still tried to make it seem like it had just happened, which is kind of sad and disturbing. NBC used to do a lot better. When it came to giving us a reason to watch these events, they used to do a lot better than this. They got to step up their game. They got to add some intrigue into something here, you know? Even the hockey has been lackluster so far, both women's and men's. I really haven't seen a reason to watch it, which is sort of how I have a feeling I'll feel about the World Baseball Classic when it happens. But the Olympics, not so much. Give me something to watch, and I'll watch it. But for now, it's just a bunch of blah. Are we over yet? Because, seriously, you're preempting medium, and that really pisses me off. That was the wind-up. Now here's the pitch. Every single Monday from 3 to 4 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, you can hear me, Ian Levenstein, along with Jason Green, Joey Maggs, David, the ghost of Michael Hornstein, the ghost of Colonel Sanders, the ghost of Fry from Futurama, and the ghost of Peter Griffin on the Sporting Goods. The email address for GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums at speakgeekspeak.com/forums with an S. And don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. There is a link to the Podcast Alley. Vote on the website. So that's pretty much all for today's GeekSpeak. Until next week, I'm Ian Levenstein. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. I'll see you next time. For those people who are, and I lose my train of thought entirely, this Friday, Adult Swim Friday Night Fix will feature the Boondocks. Oh, wow, that's great. That's not the news that I wanted. Fantastic. Defender. Hey, it's a Defender. Storage Space, and it definitely is. Once again, Storage Space. I said it again. The company. You'll probably actually get, as I cough there for the world to hear, that's basically how you get your pull box. That's basically how you get, what's a pull box? They're not even going to go for three weeks. We'll be right back. It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.